Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and this is the Downtime Podcast, where I take you behind the scenes of downhill and enduro mountain biking and meet some of the characters involved in making this sport as great as it is. This episode of the podcast is supported by Cushcore. As a Downtime listener, you'll know that I love the damping that Cushcore provides and the way it enables the bike to carry momentum better through the rough stuff, really allowing you to go bigger, corner harder and ride faster with total confidence. One of the things that puts some people off is they've heard that they're hard to install. I'll admit that I struggled the first time, but once I actually watched the install video and learned to do it properly, it was totally fine. The only issue I had was that pushing the bead down using my usual tie levers was pretty uncomfortable on the palm of my hand. Luckily, Cushcore are about to release their own tie lever called the Bead Dropper, which solves that issue. I've been lucky enough to get my hands on one just in time to fit Cushcore to my new wheels, and it works like a dream. Not only is it a great tire lever for fitting Cushcore, it's a great tire lever to have in your toolbox full stop, as it's strong, it won't damage your rims, and it's super ergonomic to use. The Bead Dropper will be available from the end of April, and you can check it out along with the rest of the Cushcore range at cushcore.com. If you fancy the chance to win a set of Cushcore, then all you've got to do is spend a couple of minutes helping me out. I want to find out a little more about my listeners, not only to help me make better content for you, but also to help when I'm talking to brands about supporting the podcast, which is ultimately what keeps this thing going. There's a short listener survey over on my website at downtimepodcast.com/survey that I'd love you to fill in. Everyone who does so and enters an email address will automatically be entered into the prize draw to win a set of Cushcore. I won't be sharing your personal information with anyone, and all the privacy info is at the top of the form. You'll also find a link to the survey in the show notes for this episode over on downtimepodcast.com. It's a pretty crazy time out there at the moment, and one of the positives of that is that there are even more mountain bike podcasts than ever, with at least three new ones starting in the last week. So there's plenty of great content to help you get through these lockdown days. Normally, I try not to overlap too much with other podcasts, and if a guest's been on other shows, I try to make sure we don't cover too much of the same ground. Right now, with so many podcasts and a lot of athletes who aren't able to ride and are looking to keep their media presence up, it's become pretty much impossible for me to make sure that my schedule doesn't overlap with other shows. So while I'll always try and bring you fresh content, I'm sorry if you've recently heard bits of it on other podcasts. Hopefully, you still enjoy what I'm doing enough to take the time to listen to the downtime version, and I hope that I can add at least a little something that you may not have heard elsewhere. As always, I really appreciate your support, especially in these challenging times. This Wednesday, we're going live again, this time with Katie Winton. The episode will go out live on our YouTube channel, and you can ask your questions to Katie in the live chat. We'll be live at 8:30 p.m. BST on Wednesday the 15th of April. So all you need to do is to head to youtube.com/downtimemountainbikepodcast. That's Downtime Mountain Bike Podcast, all as one word. Come along and chat with Katie. All right. This week, I'm joined again by last year's most popular guest, Johan Borelli. Last time we spoke, Johan was recovering from a knee injury, and a lot has changed since then. We chat about COVID-19 and the impact it's having on him and the bike industry. We cover some of Johan's thoughts on the environment and find out more about how his garbage cleanups came about. We also discuss some of the things that Johan has used to help him through a really tough year, including meditation and breathing techniques. I hope you enjoy the episode, and maybe there's something in there that will help you improve your own well-being as well. So, without further ado, here's Johan Borelli. Johan Borelli, welcome back to the Downtime Podcast. How's it going?
I'm great. How are you, Chris?
I'm really good, thank you. I'm really, really good. Cool. So let's pick up where we left off last time. And you had quite a nasty knee injury. You'd had some surgery, and you were kind of on the road to recovery last time we spoke. How's things progressed since then?
So I think that last time we spoke was we said it August last year, and I just had my knee surgery. Which basically was to go back in time was ACL and meniscus and second degree or first degree tear on the MCL. Anyways, just had surgery and I was on crutches, couldn't really move. Everything went well. It was quite a good rehab. And that's it. I'm back on my bike. I was starting to get back at speed before all this COVID-19 started. I was ready to race again, and then no racing. Yeah.
How did you approach getting back up to speed then? Because it was a big time off. It was a good few months.
It was long. So I started biking just in January. So okay. After 7 months, because I injured myself in June. Yeah, and wow. then I injured myself in June. I had the surgery July, at the end of July. And started, I think, going to the gym at the end of August and getting back, you know, like back to training and moving again. And but yeah, until January, I didn't bike at all. I didn't bike.
Well, and, I didn't realize it was quite such a big time off.
It's long. The knee injury is super long. Like they say, in between 9 months to 1 year to get back to where you were at. And at first, I was kind of thinking that I would recover faster than that, because you know, like we are professional mountain bikers, and we have to do everything better than everybody else.
of course.
So I was kind of expecting to be back riding after 5 months, which wasn't the case at all. At first 5 months, I wasn't ready at all. No, it was, not even crossing my mind to be back on the bike. And it was actually pretty weird because I put so much pressure on myself by just that. You know, like kind of, I need to get back on the bike like super early. And I was kind of like, okay, I need to be ready for the beginning of season. And so I put a lot of pressure on myself without really knowing it. And it's in January. So I started biking in Mexico again and doing my rehab and starting, you know, like super mellow bike ride, but I was really enjoying it. But my knee was really sore. Like I had such a bad pain inside the knee and it wasn't strong and it wasn't ready. And I had a surgeon appointment at the end of January. And so I told her, I was like, well, I can't really bike yet. Like my knee's like, it's really sore. And she kind of looked at me and she was like, well, you know, Johan, you kind of, you're not a superhero. You're just human and you're going to take as long as anybody else to heal your knee and maybe longer. And that at that moment, I kind of was like, oh, all right. reality check. And I was like, yeah, she's right. Like, you know, I'm not, and I don't have to believe that. I don't have to put this pressure on myself. So I kind of released everything and I was like, wow, there is no way I'm going to be ready for the beginning of the season. Like let's kind of face reality here. And the pressure kind of disappeared. And when I was just after that, I went biking again and my knee started to feel way better. So just by like releasing the pressure and being like accepting it like the way it was, I kind of maybe accelerated the process. I don't know. And then, and then the progression like went super fast after that. I was riding and starting to feel more confident and more confident and more confident. And I was starting to hit big jumps again for the first time. I was really rediscovering how to bike again with like a new perspective. And I was feeling good, man. I was really feeling good.
It must have felt so exciting to be back on a bike after that long as well.
And when, you know, like riding is one thing, but when you start to have the confidence to do some crazy moves. And you know, like the kind of sketchy stuff that I like to ride. Like I like to do junky stuff that are not really well made. And that's a little bit my style of riding. And when I was able to do this kind of stuff again and being creative with the terrain and doing like weird gaps and landing with like something really tiny, like it was good. Like I was like, oh, that's it. I'm back. It was super fun.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Didn't you start back on a city bike or something and end up riding some pretty gnarly trails?
So yeah.
I'm sure I saw a video.
That was actually, that wasn't a good idea. But it's actually Comensal wanted me to basically give me a surprise. And they were like, well, we know you're going to be able to ride soon. And they were like, we have a bike for you. And so I went down to Squamish at Comensal, Canada, and I don't know, like I was expecting like an enduro bike or like a Furious or a Clash or something like that. And then I show up in the showroom and there was this city bike waiting for me, and they were like, "There you go!" And I was like, "Are you kidding me?" And they're like, well, no, that's the only way we're going to keep you out of trouble. So I was like, oh, that, okay. So I took the bike and then I went for a little middle bike ride. And then I was kind of like ramping up a little bit. And then, and then at some point I ended up in a double black diamond trail. And I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure I can ride on that. So I did it. And I give them back the bike and I was like, well, I kind of did something a little bit stupid today. No, it was funny. It was pretty funny. But then after that, I really felt like I wasn't ready. So I took a break again and waited until January to bike again.
Yeah. And were you still in contract with all your sponsors and stuff? Like how does that all work?
So I signed a 2 years contract with everybody at the end of 2018. So okay. I'm still in contract with everybody, all my sponsors from last year. And my contract run out at the end of 2020, which is okay. Super great. It's super great to be in my position right now, because last year, so I had no season because I injured myself. And this year, we probably won't have any season as well, which means that nobody is going to want Yohan Barelli in 2021.
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah.
It's a pretty tough position to be in right now.
For sure. And I think, you're not going to be the only one, are you? There's going to be quite a few athletes that have got contract renewals or contracts running out.
Yeah.
And I get this is unprecedented. We've never had this situation, I suppose, where none of you have been able to show yourselves.
Never. I think it's the first time in the history that we are, the whole world is in a lockdown. Yeah. So it's kind of like right now we still don't know if are we going to race this year or not. Like it's a really weird situation that we are living. They postponed all the races. But we are still in lockdown. Like they are talking about not even opening the bike park in Whistler for the whole summer. So if they don't open, means that there is no crankworks. You know, like it's a weird thing. Like we have no idea how long is that going to last, this situation. We don't really know. So even if there is a season, like, you know, just imagine we start the season in September. Like it will be what? Like 3 races, 4 races? Like some countries, some people are going to be able to ride way earlier than some others. So it's not even going to be fair. You know, like the game is going to be pretty weird really. So I don't even think that sponsors going to really, you know, like kind of take that as a gauge for next year contract or, you know, like it's weird.
Yeah. What does lockdown look like for you guys at the moment?
Well, we are not really in lockdown here. So we do physical distancing. They try to limit bike rides. Don't do stupid stuff. Grocery store, we have lineup. So it's kind of the same as France and Italy and Spain. Are you guys in lockdown in UK or?
Yeah. We're locked down. Yeah.
Oh, so you are. Okay. So it's a little bit the same as you, just that we can leave our place. We can be outside for as long as we want. You just have to respect physical distancing and stuff like that. That's all.
And not end up in hospital.
And don't end up in the hospitals, of course. Which is pretty, it's tough here because we are just at the end of winter. And people are outside biking. Like it's actually pretty crazy the amount of people that are biking. And the hospitals of Pemberton, Whistler, and Squamish are still getting people injured from bike injuries. Right. So we don't want to. I don't think that BC is really busy in terms of COVID-19 cases, but still. Like just in case we have a wave or something, like we just have to be respectful for that and don't overkill the emergency rooms and stuff like that, the hospitals.
Yeah. So how are you approaching kind of training and staying fit and getting ready for whatever this year ends up looking like.
So I think, like everybody, the first week being in lockdown, like we all tried to, you know, to train and to make like a little setup at home. And it's funny to look at social media, and we all have done that, all of us. Like we were showing ourselves training and stuff like that, and it was all good, and we were having fun and trying to adapt ourselves and everything. And then the second week was everybody was getting bored, and everybody was starting to ride their bikes in their place, in their places, at home, in their home, and stuff.
Yeah,
it was kind of like the ride at home challenge and all this kind of stuff. And week three, everybody is getting bored of that as well. Riding around your place is kind of stupid. And now everybody is becoming a cook, so everybody is a chef now on Instagram. Everybody is making bread. Sourdough bread. Yeah. And I think that now we are entering week four, and week four is more like, okay, what are we training for? Like, when is the next race? Is it even going to happen? Like, everybody is starting to realize that the situation is pretty crazy, and we don't know how long is that going to last, and what are we training for? You know, like, why? Right now, you know, like you don't want to keep training yourself like crazy if you don't have any goals already. So right now I think that everybody is not doing anything. Like, we are eating Nutella.
Yeah, I saw the empty pot on your Instagram.
it was actually the first time I was eating Nutella in so long, and I was at the grocery store the other day, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna do it, and then I ate the full jar in 2 days.
Good effort. That was the big jar as well.
That was, yeah. So yeah, that's where we're at right now.
So it's off season again, basically.
It's basically off season, and I think it's really important for everybody to keep like physical activity and moving a little bit, being outside at least once a day. But other than that, yeah, we are in off season, and everybody is probably pretty depressed right now. It's pretty challenging. It's pretty tough times.
Yeah, yeah. And is it a rider's, as far as you know, a rider's kind of safe financially? Because, I mean, ultimately, you guys get paid to give exposure to the brands that you work for.
So
that's kind of hard if you're not out riding and racing, I suppose.
So that's one thing as well. You know, how long this crisis is going to last. How long does or do like the industry is going to face this crisis, you know? Because there is a lot of brands right now, they are not selling anything anymore. So yeah, they are not making any money. And the first thing that they're going to try to save their business is by cutting marketing budget. And yeah, marketing budget is the professional athletes. So, like right now, I would be really, really, really surprised if we get paid our full salaries this year. Mm-hmm. So I think they're gonna pay us like right now what they owe us. But how we gonna get paid this year? I have no idea. Like, you know, like that's and it would be pretty silly to really force it. You know, like to force the industry to pay us, because, you know, like if they spend all our money on us and they can't even pay their employees or stuff like that, and they go bankrupt, then it's going to be completely dramatic for the bike industry.
So
you kind of, I think it's going to be full of compromises this year, and we have to work together. And it's going to be pretty interesting to see how everybody's going to deal with it. But I actually received letters from CEOs of brands telling us that right now they are holding any payments, and they're going to wait until the end of the crisis. So it's happening, you know, like they are starting to be like, oh, we don't know if we can pay you this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tricky time.
And it's going to be this year, but it's going to impact next year. It's going to impact the year after. So it's going to impact us, all of us, pro athletes and everybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's going to take a long time for
It's going to take a long time.
Not just the bike industry, but...
Yes, for everything. I'm talking about the bike industry, but it's going to be the whole world basically facing this crisis. And right now, we have no idea. Are we going to go into recession? How big the crisis is going to be? Like, how the economy is actually going to... You know, like right now, the governments are giving money to people and everything, but they are not giving us money. Like, we're going to pay through our taxes next year and the year after and the year after. So it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of crazy to think about all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, especially when it feels like it sort of arrived overnight almost. I know it didn't, but like it came so quickly. It turned from being something that was really just a relatively small contained thing in a part of China to the whole world.
It went all world, and it's actually pretty interesting to see that we are not ready to face something like that. Like right now, governments and everybody is struggling to, they have no clue what they are doing. Like seriously, like you see the medias, the governments have no clues. Like they don't know, like holy shit, what do we do? One day they're going to say something and then next day they're going to say something else. And then it's like, wow, this is complete gong show right now. So, it is different, the infos that we get in Canada are completely different than the infos that you guys get in Europe. Like it's really weird. Yeah.
It's been pretty strange. What, and how do you think people are responding in general? Like, have you been impressed with people? Are you disappointed in people?
Well, disappointed, not really. Impressed in some ways, yes. There is plenty of good stuff that are happening. As we said, it's the first time in history that we are all in lockdown, pretty much everywhere in the world. Maybe not lockdown, but like physical distancing and everything and staying at home as much as possible and stuff like that. Not working, like almost nobody is working. Nobody's working. It's kind of, impressed in the way that we can adapt to this kind of stuff. And there has been something really positive out of that, is that there is a lot of spirituality going out of, like people are meditating, people are doing yoga live, people are, you know, like there's a lot of like gym session live, like there is this whole thing where everybody is sharing more of what they do. And it's kind of, that's pretty amazing. And there's a lot of positive. Yeah, you know, you can work on some stuff that you completely put aside, and people are spending more time with their families, and it's I see a lot of positive. And even if we go back to normal, like, you know, even if there is no, like, I don't know, like people are not really understanding anything out of this situation, if we don't know what's, you know, like if we don't see bigger than just the virus, then there will still be some positive out of that. So it's all good. Well, it's kind of scary and dramatic because, yes, people are dying, people are suffering, and that's the negative out of it. But there is something big happening. We are kind of living a moment of history, and our kids are actually going to learn that at school. You know, like this moment, 2020, is something that they're going to learn. It's history.
In a big way. Social media has kind of got an interesting role in it, in that it's,
yes,
in some ways really positive and enabling people to keep in contact, and in some ways it's really negative.
I totally agree. And one of the things is on Facebook, people share dumb shit. Like people share like false information. Like it's completely, like it's not founded. Like it's like clickbait title with clickbait sentences in like articles that are not made by anybody. Like, you know, like where is this information comes from? And that's what people read. Like, you know, people go on Facebook for their news, but that's not where you get your news. You know, like that's a, It's bullshit, and that's scary. There is something really scary in that. And right now, if you just read your news on Facebook, then you are only going to read, like for most of it, conspiracy theories. And that can bring you into some pretty dark places. And I don't think that it's really necessary to go there, because there is no way you can know exactly what's happening right now. And we can't control that. It's kind of, yeah.
What's been your approach to social media then? How have you continued? Well, you've been posting, so you're continuing to use it, but how are you filtering kind of what you read and what you don't and what you trust?
So for my news, I really read the news, and I try to really moderate that. So I'm going to read your news maybe once a day. Kind of, yeah, quickly, but CNN and this kind of stuff. And I kind of go on the world stats to see a little bit, you know, the numbers of cases and deaths per countries, and kind of see myself, even if the numbers are not really real, they are kind of, now they've been the same in every country. So you can keep track on the numbers and stuff, and you can actually see, you know, like if it's going down a little bit or kind of shitting the bed in some other countries and stuff like that. So I just check that once a day as well, just to have a little bit some infos on that. And for the rest, like conspiracy theories, like you just go on Facebook and then you can totally know what's going on. Like right now there is the 5G stuff, and then there is like things about conspiracy with government. And it's kind of, even with the 5G, you know, I was kind of intrigued with the 5G thing. And, but if you go on Facebook, you're going to have people going to say, oh, the 5G is going to be really bad for the people's health and stuff like that. And so I was like, okay, but what does he actually do? Like, how does 5G work, and what does it do for the human body? So I started to Google, and you're like, okay, 5G, radio waves or shit like that. And then you start to learn about radio waves, how radio wave works, or how microwaves works, how, you know, what impact do they have on the body. And that's when you really read studies of scientists, and they only talk, you know, like what their study is. They are not like bought by telecommunication networks or stuff like that. It's like proper studies. And you basically, you learn stuff. And so I was learning, for this kind of stuff, I learned a lot. And then after that, I was like, but how is it actually made? You know, like, how is the 5G going to work? What the infrastructure are going to be? And that's when I actually learned that 5G, to have the 5G work, they're going to send 20,000 satellites in orbit in the sky.
Wow.
20,000. So that's like a rocket going to space, satellites, the time, basically the satellites are going to die after 5 years. So that's their,
okay.
Yeah. So we got every 5 years, we're going to have to replace all these fucking satellites. And then they're going to put towers a little bit everywhere. And you know, like, and you start to realize like, okay, even if the 5G is not really bad for people, it's going to be, for the environment, it's going to be a fucking nightmare. And it's going to be pretty bad. So you basically, that's how I kind of filter my news, is that actually I learn myself a lot on everything right now, because I have time and I've never really done that. And now I'm kind of, you know, I'm becoming a scientist.
Excellent. Got some research on the go.
I'm doing some research. I'm a searcher.
I love it. But on the environmental side of things, it's kind of good, I guess, right now. The planet's getting a bit of a rest. Like, there's very little aviation going on. I haven't seen a plane fly over here for a good while.
Yeah.
And there's way less traffic. Like, it almost feels like the planet needed a bit of a rest from us.
The planet needed a break from us, that's for sure. And you know, like, is it actually some stuff that we control? Is it not like, isn't it like something a little bit more powerful in life than just what we see? And, you know, like, that's the force of life. Like, what's happening? It's life doing its natural reaction. And boom, there is a virus going on. And it makes us slow down to maybe realize that, you know, nothing is has to be taken for granted. And we have to take care of that. I think it's like, I kind of believe in that. I believe that there is something more powerful than what we just see. And right now it's life. life basically sending us a little sign, a little tap on the shoulder and being like, hey guys, you need to slow down, because if you don't, you are going like straight head first into the wall, and it's going to be pretty nasty, you know?
Yeah.
And it is like it seems to me that like right now we are like, we have thousands of scientists in the world saying that climate change is real, and we can't see it. Like, we don't believe it. So it seems to me that the human, like humans, we are not good to anticipate things, and we are just good to react, you know?
Yeah.
We are just good in reaction. Like right now, the COVID-19, we are reacting. And we are reacting pretty well, you know? Like, everybody is staying inside, everybody is like reacting super well. But the thing is that with climate change, like, scientists are talking about the tipping point. And if we pass the tipping point, basically it's going to be, we won't be able to change it anymore.
Mm.
And if we don't pay attention to everything that we do right now, we might pass the tipping point, but it's going to be too late. And what's happening right now with COVID-19 might be just a little glimpse of what's going to happen in the world, on the planet, on us, if we don't pay attention right now. I think there's something pretty, you know, there's something happening. We have evidences everywhere and we don't really see it. And I think it's time now to change.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've definitely been focusing on that. I've felt that more and more from your output, I guess, in the last 6, 8, 9 months. But
since basically the injury, or say your question, sorry, I cut you.
No, I was wondering how you see, in being an athlete who competes internationally, it's quite a tricky balance, isn't it? Between
that
kind of consumption and use of the planet's resources versus being outside and enjoying the fresh air and everything good that comes with mountain biking. How do you see yourself in that mix?
Well, it's pretty tough. So I always felt a little bit unbalanced with all of that since I basically became pro. I think that since I became pro, I became really like closer to nature, and I had this, you know, like this strong connection with that. And being a pro is a little bit the opposite of what we should be doing right now. You know, like, we travel the world. I think that last year, I went in 55, oh no, 2 years ago, when I did a full season, I went into 55 plane.
Whoa.
Like, not, I didn't do 55 travels, but I went into 55 planes, which sometimes you take 6 planes to go somewhere and come back.
Yeah.
But 55 planes, which is pretty insane. My carbon footprint is shit, you know. Like, even if I try to do my best with, like, I'm almost vegan and I do my recycle the best I can and I do all this kind of stuff, my carbon footprint is shitty. I drive a Toyota Tundra, I drive a V8. You know, like, this is the kind of stuff that right now I'm kind of like, do I really need that? Anyways. And then on top of that, I'm being paid by brands to sell stuff, basically. So I'm pushing people to consume more without really doing it. Like, I'm not someone who always tag my sponsors and kind of, oh, sweet ride with my Commensal Meta 29er, blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm not someone doing that, you know, like, I'm not promoting brands like that, but I still do it. And I'm kind of struggling these days with that. I'm really struggling. Since basically November, where I started to organize these garbage pickups in Whistler, I became more and more and more aware of that. And right now, it's a little bit of a challenge for me.
Yeah. So what came first? Was it the garbage pickups as a result of wanting to do something to feel better about that kind of environmental impact you're having, or did something else drive that and then you realized more about the environmental impact?
I think when I, what happened is the since I was I became pro, I always been kind of someone talking about, you know, like when there is like ecological like catastrophe, like as you say, like for example the fires in Australia.
Yeah, catastrophe. Yeah.
Like this kind of stuff. And yeah. I always been kind of someone who pushed that on social media to help, to bring help. And it's by starting to do that that I started to realize that fucking hell, nature is really fragile. And right now we are basically destroying everything. And that's when I started to realize that what I was saying and what I was promoting through that was completely unbalanced with my lifestyle.
Yeah.
And my job as well. But then it was a little bit in the back of my head, like without really, you know, thinking about it too much. And I was kind of okay with this unbalance in my life. And then it's really when I started the garbage pickup. And the garbage pickup actually started that I was driving in Pemberton and I was following a guy in his truck, and he basically tossed his Tim Horton plastic cup out of his window. And behind this guy, and I was like, holy shit, we are in 2019 and people still do that. And I was so mad at the guy. I was really mad. I was like, fucking hell. Like I was really swearing. And I drove and I started to look on the side of the highway. So in between Whistler and Pemberton, there's not much traffic. Like, you know, it's not like a really busy road. And I started to look on the side of the highway, and the highway was just like disgusting. It was like trash everywhere. And I was like, oh my God, like I never really paid attention to it. And I got to the parking lot and I was like, wow, I spent like 15 minutes like being so mad at this guy, and I didn't do anything about it. You know, like I didn't stop. I didn't pick up the thing. Like I just didn't do anything about it. I just blamed this poor guy. Because he's probably having a shitty life or a shitty day if he does this. But it's true. Like if someone kind of does this kind of stuff, well, he's not really happy in his life. Like he's not really, he's not well. Anyway, So instead of having compassion and doing something about it, I was just like blaming and pointing the finger and stuff. And I was like, wow, this is what we do. Like, you know, like we just blame people for the stuff that they don't do. And we just point the finger and we don't take responsibility for anything, and we don't take actions. And that's like a big eye opener for me. I was like, wow, I can do something about that. You know, like I can go on the side of the highway and I can pick up trash. So I posted something on Instagram and I was like, okay guys, I just saw that. And on Monday, I want to meet up. It was like kind of holidays or something. I was like, I want to meet up and at this point, at this hour, and let's go clean the highway. And I was like, fucking hell, I have 170,000 followers on Instagram. There will be a shit ton of people. And then the Monday, I showed up at 8:30 on the side of the highway, and there were only one person showed up. One person. Whoa. Yeah. And I was like, well, that's fine. So it was my buddy Shane Roy. And and we took garbage bags and stuff, and we were like, okay, let's do it. And we started to pick up garbage and stuff, and it was pretty positive. Like we kind of had a super good time, and we picked up so much. Like in 3 hours, we picked up 350 kilos of trash. Whoa. On the side of the road on 1.5 kilometer.
Insane.
Like it was insane. Like it was completely insane. And then after that, we're like, oh my God. Like, you know, like, Whistler is supposed to be like a pretty clean place. And we're like, can you imagine like in like some like countries where they don't have the same education, like it could be like, it's a disaster. It's like garbage, it's probably garbage everywhere. So we kind of made some stats to have fun a little bit. And I don't know, like I think, I don't remember exactly what was the stats, but it was like, okay, let's say this, what we found is an average. And it's an average in the world. And we're like, how many kilometers of road is there in the world? And I think there is like 67 million kilometers roadside in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think we ended up like, okay, we picked up like 7.6 million kilos of garbage. So there's 7.6 million kilos of garbage in the world. We are 7.6 billion people on the planet right now. What about if everybody at the same time pick up garbage on the side of the roads? How long will it take? How many meters people will have to walk? And how many kilos of garbage does everybody will have to pick up? And I think we ended up like, okay, people will have to walk, I think 7 meters, only 7 meters. They will pick up 700 grams of garbage each, and yeah. It will take less than a minute to clean the whole planet.
Whoa.
So we're like, okay, so by just doing a little bit, by everybody just a little bit more, then we can really do big thing and we can change the world. We can do it. And we don't yeah. have to wait for governments and big corporations to do it. We can actually do it just like that.
Yeah.
So that was a big eye opener for me. And I think I forgot your question.
Well, that, I mean, we were just talking about the garbage collections and kind of where it came from. Yeah. But they grew from there, right? You carried on.
So I carried on. I was like, okay, you know what? That's not just a one shot, and I want to do it every week. So every week I posted it on social media, and I think the next week we were 4. And the next week we were 12, and the next week we were 20, and the next week we were 40. So the movement was just like growing so much. Like we were picking up like 1 ton of garbage, like sometimes every week, 1 ton of garbage.
Amazing.
Under the pissing rain, like cold, and people were just smiling. And the goal was like, we are not going to ask anything to anybody. We're just going to do it. And we're going to smile. We are not like blaming anybody. And the vibe was just so good. Like, you know, it was just a bunch of people on the side of the road picking up trash, like picking up treasures. That's what people were saying. Oh, look, I found that. Like, it was so fun. And it started to become like really like a lot of attraction from the media and stuff. So we had like an article on the local magazine, The Peak. The mayor of Whistler called us, like he contacted us, and he was like, guys, just want to have a meeting with you. Like, so me and my buddy Shane, who's become like my real good buddy, the guy that showed up on the first time. So we went on with the mayor. We had a meeting with him, and we explained the movement and everything. And at some point, after an hour talking, he was like, but what do you guys want? And we were like, well, we want nothing. Like, we don't want anything. And he was like, wow. He was like, can you imagine, guys, that every day I have like associations or stuff like that, they come to me and they basically point the finger at us, telling us that we don't do things well. And I was like, and you guys show up and you do something that's pretty amazing and you don't want anything from me. And I was like, no, we don't care. Awesome. Maybe we just go on garbage bags. That's it.
That would help. Yeah.
No, but it was cool. And it was just like, and the TV came as well. So they did a little report on us, and it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. And so sorry.
No, we wanted to do it in the spring now that the snow is melting, but we are in a, we can't really do it. Maybe just encouraging people to pick up stuff, like have a little garbage bag when they go outside and pick up things to do something good. I mean, I'm actually going to talk about that. It would be cool.
Yeah, we've got trash-free trails.
I know.
Here in the UK.
We have a little partnership together.
Excellent.
We're going to do some stuff together in the future.
Yeah, they're doing some good stuff. They did a trail clean sprint tour, which I went on one of last year, where they traveled around some of the sort of main riding spots in the UK, and all, people would come along for the evening and pick stuff up. And it's
unreal. I know it. What they do is cool. Yeah. It's cool. It's really cool what they do. But and then as you said, it's crazy the stuff you found. Like it's insane. Like
some really weird stuff.
Yeah. There are some pretty weird stuff. Yeah. Anyways.
But yeah, once you've started looking for it, you notice it more, I think. And then when you go on a ride or whatever, you spot stuff and you can pick it up and put it in your pockets or in your pack or whatever and take it home.
Yeah. You don't really, it's true. As soon as you start, you actually start to realize the amount of garbage and you know, like the packaging and everything that we have everywhere. And you start to really notice that, and you're like, holy shit, like we can't do that anymore. We can't just keep producing, and we just can't do it. Like again, we are going back to talking about the planet and environment and stuff, but it's we seriously have to do something about it. Yeah, and I think that right now, especially plastic and everything, you know, like the way we market everything and the way we produce stuff, like right now everything is turned toward quantity, and we completely left quality in everything. Like everything is basically single use now, but we can't do that. We have to go back to quality. We have to slow down productions. I think we have to see things differently. And in the bike industry, I have few ideas for the bike industry, but it's kind of putting myself in a little bit of a risky position, because I'm really gonna expose my values to my sponsors, mm-hmm. and say this is where I want to go, and this is what I believe in. And right now there is some stuff that are happening in the bike industry, within the bike industry, that are not at all in line with these values. And I'm totally gonna be honest with sponsor. I'm gonna say no, like I don't want to work with you anymore. If you don't want to change, if you don't want to make an effort, this is me, and I don't want to promote brands if they don't do any effort. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at right now.
That's a tricky one, isn't it? Because you have to make a living and put some good food on the table. But yeah, you don't want to compromise your values, right?
You do, but at some point, I have this, you know, like I have this strong belief in me, and as I said, I'm really struggling with all of that right now. I'm trying to, you know, talk about it with my sponsors right now. About packaging that they have, like even small step, like packaging is a super small step. Like, why do we have to have super fancy packaging for everything that we buy? Why don't mm-hmm. we have just like simply a cardboard? That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Simply. Like, would it be a difference for you if you go into a bike shop and you have, like, for example, a pair of pedals? You have a pair of pedals that are the same pedals in just a simple cardboard box, with a thin layer of cardboard to separate the two pedals so they don't get scratched into transport and stuff. And you have the same pair of pedals in a really fancy packaging, all painted, full of plastic and stuff that look really good. Which one would you buy? Like, is there a difference?
Yeah, if it's the same price. Ones in the cardboard, probably. But there's no need for it, for sure.
So I feel like we are doing some stuff that are so things that we were doing in the 80s. And we are not getting out of that. You know, like, we don't need that anymore. We don't need to have this fancy shit to buy stuff. We don't need it. So it's again, that's time to change. Like, you know, when you buy a bike, there is like plastic wraps everywhere. Like, and sometimes you have like little pieces of cardboard with plastic inside. It's not even recyclable. You don't recycle that. So it goes like straight into the trash. And when you buy like a pair of pedals with like packaging and same like plastic and stuff, what do you do with the packaging? It goes in the trash. And it's too if it's too complicated to sort out the plastic and the cardboard and the paper and everything, people put it in the trash. They don't even recycle it.
Yeah, and, it's horrific, isn't it?
Yeah, and so that's just the packaging. Just even if we don't change the way we market things, if we don't change the quality of products and stuff like that. But if now, if we go into, you know, there are solutions. Like, why don't we, instead of like making everything in China or like this country, why don't we go back to our countries, you know, back here, and then have like smaller factories? Maybe the prices will go a little bit higher, but the quality will be better. Like, so your product is more reliable, it lasts longer. And you have like just imagine you're a brand, and you have like a relationship with your client that's like next level. Means that when your client buys something to you for the first time, you keep this client. Like, you say, what about if we come in 1 year with a new product, we engage ourselves to take back yours, so we're going to recycle it, and we give you a discount on the new one that you buy, you know? There are solutions. So you have like, you reduce quantity, you pull up the quality, prices are a little bit higher, but the longevity of what you buy is way longer, and you have a relationship with your clients that's next level. It's, you know, like you go into sustainable business, and you are not like into this kind of growth and no matter what, and marketing bullshit. And because we know that most of the marketing in the mountain bike industry is a little bit bullshit. Oops. But it's true. Like every year, like all the bikes are going to be 5 millimeter longer, lower, slacker. Like we know it. And every year it's like the new revolution and everything and blah, blah, blah. And it's like we are trying to reinvent the wheel. Like it exists. It's fine now. We have 29ers, 27.5. We have all the sizes. We're good. Like we don't need another one now. We're good.
could you ever see yourself?
Boost, we have the boost, super boost, mega boost. Like, it's good.
Yeah,
like,
don't get started on that. Can you ever see yourself running your own kind of business within the bike industry then, making, I don't know, some kind of component or kit? Yeah,
I do. And I really do. So right now I'm actually, because I'm not really, really doing much anyways, like we can't train, we can't ride, we can't do anything. So I'm working a lot on creation of businesses. So one of them is a kind of coaching, guiding business that's going to happen. It was supposed to start in April. We didn't launch anything. We haven't launched anything yet. So we are taking time to create, like really finish the website and everything. So that's what I'm going to do. It's not going to be like conventional coaching. Like there's a lot of coaches out there that coaches people to corner or to drop or to do this kind of stuff. And they do it super well. And I don't want to take any of that. It's going to be something really based on like the experience and my vision of the terrain and the way I write stuff. So it's going to be pretty unique, and there will be partners involved, like local partners, like food during the day and everything, but like locally sourced, super packaging, vegan stuff, like really, really, really good. And making local businesses work together. So we are kind of promoting that as well. And this business that I'm creating with a business partner will have different branches. And I'm not going to talk about the different branches of the business. I just talked to one, and I'm going to keep it here for now. But there is a...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's cool. I have a... I'm someone that's really creative. And I think that until now, I didn't know how to do stuff. You know, like, I think that I have a really creative brain, but as soon as it goes... like all the fucking papers with governments and how to create a business and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I'm really bad at that. I really struggle. And then sometimes it really discouraged me. And my business partner is actually pretty top, next level on this kind of stuff. And we are a super good team. Like it's amazing. She gets shit done. I have the ideas. We sit down, we talk. Okay, we can do that. Boom, let's go. And right now we are working on a lot of stuff, and it's going to be sweet. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's cool.
That's good to hear. Yeah. Watch this space. Are there companies either within the bike industry or outside then that you look up to as sort of people that are doing things the way you think it should be done?
Well, for example, there's so Commensal, for example, one of my sponsors, but I'm not saying that because it's one of my sponsors. But for example, they will never go to carbon frames. Never. They did in the past. They went back to aluminium. And one of the main reasons is for ecological reasons, because aluminium is 100% recyclable, and 80% of the aluminium is used right now is the aluminium that ever been produced. How do you say that? Did it make sense? Did I make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, like so 80% of the aluminium that we are using now is the one that always been in the cycle. How do you say that? Well, anyways, you understand. You understood.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, it's 80% of what we've taken from the earth we're still using.
There we go. That was English.
I'm not sure if that's any better, but that's my
version. It was. I understood. So commensal are doing. I really like that, and there is some of our backgrounds. Like I'm not even gonna only talk about commensal, but there is Poly. They do the same. There's some other. I don't know if there's any other bike brands who only does aluminium for that. As I know, Poly is the same reasons, one of the main reasons as well. For components, same, Spank. Spank, they don't do any carbon. Everything is in aluminium. And Spank right now is probably the only part brand to really reduce their packaging as well.
Yeah, I spotted that. I had some handlebars from them, and it's all in cardboard only. And there's some information on the packaging about how they're approaching that, which I thought was pretty cool.
And that's it. And there's no plastic inside, no nothing. Do you have maybe you have a sticker inside? That's it.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. So there are some brands out there, and Spank. The reason why they only do aluminium is for the same reason, because they don't want to go into carbon. Carbon is not recyclable. And even if you can recycle it, like I think the process to do it is like a fucking gong show, and it's maybe even more worse for the environment anyways. Aluminium is not clean. You know, like we are still, and again, you can be doing aluminium and this kind of stuff, but if your marketing is shit and you push people to buy and buy and buy and buy and buy and buy, well, we are still in the same problem. You know, like you're not solving anything. You just kind of pretend. So
yeah. Bikes that last longer than a year is a good idea.
It would be pretty rad. Yes, it would be pretty rad. It would be pretty rad to have some brands out there who start to really do that. And you know, like, I don't know, to have some, when you come out with something new, like we've had some really good, amazing technology, how do you say, step forwards, like the seat post, like the dropper post. That's amazing. That's seriously amazing. But some of the stuff we had is, no, it's like, it doesn't make sense.
doesn't play.
Like one thing that should be changed right now, by now, like if there is one thing that's on the top of the list of brands, is the fucking derailleur. Like let's get rid of this shit. Like let's have a fucking gearbox on our bikes. Like it's reliable. It's going to last long and it's going to be there, you know, like, and we don't have this fucking dingling stuff on the back on our bike that goes into rocks and you fucking break it all the time. So Let's go there. Let's have a gearbox. SRAM, do it. Let's give us a gearbox. Let's do it. Let's work on it. We can do it.
It does seem strange that hasn't been like solved. I mean, it's been solved. It's been done, but it's never been done at a level where it has properly caught on.
No. And we probably know the reasons why. Yeah? But you know, like if SRAM are the first one to go into a gearbox, then, you know, it's going to be amazing. Like the business is not going to slow down, you know, like they're going to have to put the gearbox on all the bikes. It's a new technology. It's a good technology, you know, like it's something good. And right now with all the e-bike stuff, why don't we have the gearbox with the motor? Like seriously, that's something that can be done completely.
Yeah, I've seen like one. You,
oh yeah?
Yeah. There's a guy up in Scotland who's working on that, and it's looks pretty cool.
That could be a start, you know, like for e-bike brands. That could be a start, you know, to introduce the gearbox to and get rid of the derailleur and have that. It should be e-bikes is such a big market right now. Then let's put a gearbox in the motor on e-bikes and no more derailleur. And you start from that, and then you derivate it on normal bikes.
Yeah, why not?
I should work for a brand.
Definitely, man.
I should have my own brand.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. Take over the world slowly, bit by bit.
but conscientiously and sustainably. Yeah.
And that can still be fun, and you can still live from it, right?
Of course, like I think that right now we have our way like, I think it's really hard for us to see a different way because we basically grew up with the technology. So we were kid and, you know, like we didn't have any smartphone. We didn't have any, all this technology that we have now. And basically we grew up at the same time of this technology and we were proud of it, you know, like, and we are still proud of the technology. Mm-hmm. But I think that right now we have no vision to, you know, like, what do we do? Like, what does it mean to slow down? And what does it mean to go back, to regress a little bit? But I think that the kids, our kids, are actually the ones that have the creativity and they have a new vision of that. They have a new vision on everything and they actually have the possibility to change things, use the technology that we have now in a good way and go back to a place where we can actually be sustainable and we don't cause more damage to the planet. I think they are actually going to do it because we are not capable of that. We are not. We are not capable of being like, I'm actually going to give up on what I have. You know, like, I actually realized a few days ago, I was thinking about this kind of stuff. And I'm like, can you imagine if I ask all the pro mountain bikers out there and tell them, guys, we need to stop what we are doing because traveling in plane and promoting brands and we are promoting overconsumption and everything is bad. And right now we need to stop. Like, who's going to agree with that? You know, like, mountain biker, professional mountain biker is pursued as a dream job. It's pursued as a dream job. And we've worked so fucking hard to get where we are at right now.
Yeah.
Who's going to give up on that? Nobody. Like, they're going to think I'm crazy. They're going to think I'm crazy.
So, yeah.
And I think that right now, I don't think that we, us, like my generation, I don't think that we are ready to do that. And we have to admit it, like, you know, it's scary. Like, but what are we going to do? Like, people that are working in cities and they don't have a garden, you know, they can't do, like, grow their veggies. They can't do anything else than just walking and being in a city and consume, going to the grocery store. They can't do anything else. So these people, they don't know how to change. And it's scary. Like, what does it mean to change everything? But I think that new generation, because they don't have this fear and they don't have they don't know the situation we are in now because they are discovering life. They have this new vision and they can make the change. So we have to tell them, guys, we fucked up. We are fucking it up. We don't know how to change. Help us. That's what we have to do.
How long do you think it will be before that generation starts to have some kind of impact, before they're old enough to start doing some of this? Because we're seeing a bit with Greta Thunberg, I guess.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
School children. That's the first part of that wave.
How old is she?
Like 13 or something.
13 or something. That's exactly what I'm going to say. What I was going to say. I was like, I think we need to address ourselves to like 10 to 15 year old, because after 15 year old, I think they are like teenagers these days. They are completely lost. Like, to be honest, like they are even worse than us.
They are
completely sucked into it. We can't ask them to do anything. So I think we need to Greta is the perfect example. Like, what she's doing is you know, like this movement that she's created without out of nothing, you know, like just protesting every Friday and about climate change. And the movement that she's created is crazy. And one other point is that no one of us adults is going to do harm to a child speaking his truth. You know what I mean? If the same situation that Greta did was an adult, we would have gone into war. Like, seriously. Like, that adult creating this movement that she created, like, she would have been killed or, like, you know, like, if she was an adult, because it's completely crazy what she did. But because she's a child, everybody was kind of like letting her do her stuff and listening to her and following her movement because it's inspiring. So I think that's where we have to go. We have to talk to these kids and be like, guys, we need you. We need your vision. We need your creativity, and let's do it.
Yeah, and it grew so quickly as well.
Yeah, it's insane.
There must be an appetite in that generation.
Yeah, there is completely, and they know. Like, you know, like if you talk to them about the way the for example, farming industry, like the way the animals are treated, that's another fucking crazy problem. Like, you know, we have like it's one thing to get your meat from like a hunter or something that's like a person that you know, or little grocery store, like local stuff, and they actually know where the food is from and how it has been killed and everything. That's one thing. But right now, most of us, I don't, because I'm vegan, but most of the people who eat meat, they have no clue of that. And they take their meat from like big farming. Animals don't even see the light of the sun. They eat shit. They eat like fucking antibiotics and stuff like that, because, you know, like their lifestyle is completely fucked. And the way they are killed is even more crazy. Like, you know, it's, what the fuck are we doing here? But if you tell that to a kid, like even before 10-year-old, then they are like, well, I don't want to eat meat. No, then I don't want to do it. Yeah. Like they are like, I don't want to treat animals like that. They love animals. They love nature. And if you tell them that we are treating animals like that, what are they going to say? No, I don't want to do that to animals. They are my friends. That's what they're going to say. Animals are my friends.
Mad, isn't it? How we got to this point where we think that's okay.
And right now we have all these informations. You know, everything is out there. We know it, how animals are killed, that it's really bad. And, you know, like it's crazy, like the world we live on. We know it, but we can't stop. You know, like it's, what the fuck is happening with us? What's happening in our brain? Like, why can't we make a fucking decision in our life and say, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be part of that. I don't want to treat animals poorly, and I don't want to be part of that. Like, how is it so hard to say that?
Yeah, mad, isn't it? So if you could ask our listeners to change one thing about the way they act, or the way that they work, what would you ask them to change?
I think it would be two things. It would be what they eat, cook your own food, like avoid all like the, you know, the big chains of like fast food and stuff like that. Avoid that, because the food that they give you is like completely toxic. It's toxic for you. Like, it's completely toxic. And the food that they take is, you know, like it's the conditions that animals live in are completely crazy. It's pretty sad. So that's one thing. Cook your own food. If you still want to eat meat, you know, like I'm not like pro vegan and tell people, no, you should not eat meat and blah, blah. I'm not like that. Everybody does his own thing. But, you know, like, pay attention to what you do. Like, if you can't kill an animal, then understand, why am I still eating meat then? Like, if I don't have the skills, or if I don't have the strength to kill an animal myself, why am I still eating meat and letting someone else doing it in like really poor conditions? Why am I contributing to the pain of like these animals that they can't even say stuff? You know, like, they don't want to die. They don't want to be treated poorly. Like, they don't want to. And so that's one thing, like, really pay attention to your food and the way we consume. You know, like, do we need the brand new phone? Do we need the like brand new stuff like that over and over and over again? Like, do we need that? Do we need to change bikes every year? Like, do we need all this kind of stuff? No, maybe not, because we don't. Instead of like changing things, and, you know, like, as soon as you have a broken screen on your phone, then you change the phone. Why don't we fix things? That why do we, don't we go back to fixing stuff? You know?
Yeah.
So I think that would be another thing. So pay attention to what you eat and how you consume as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. When I moved from my previous job to doing the podcast full time, I obviously took a large cut in income, and it's been really interesting for me.
What were you doing before?
I was an engineer and earned reasonably well for that. So if I wanted something, I mean, I wasn't rich, but like, if I wanted something that was sensible, I could buy it, like a new phone or a computer you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I used to spend money and buy bike stuff and all this sort of stuff. And then now I have to think about every purchase, and I have to justify it, and it has to be, you know, has to be worth making.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't really need much. Like,
no, we don't. We don't.
Yeah. And you suddenly realize, like, I don't ever go to town anymore, because I don't need anything. Like, it's, it's crazy the stuff you buy that you think you need that you don't really need.
No, we don't. Like there's a big difference in what we need and what we want. You know?
Yeah.
Like I think that right now we are in the what we want, and I think we need to go back in the what we need. Like what do we need? We don't need much, seriously. Yeah, we don't.
Yeah, life can be pretty simple. So let's talk a little bit. Sorry, go on, Jan.
Yeah, I was going to say like life is really simple, and I was thinking the other day. I'm thinking a lot these days. I was thinking like, just imagine if we kind of got into this society, and it's actually, you know, it's a wrong way. Like we went the wrong way. Like we are actually like everything is kind of like not contributing to our well-being in this world right now. Like social media is not, like clearly not. And I actually realized it with like what's happening right now in the world. Like it's not contributing to our well-being at all. You can actually, that's fucking hell. Everything is so fake. Like how fake it is? How fake is that to show yourself bike in your home right now? are you doing that all day? No, you just do it for social media. That, you know, like what is that all about? Like it's not, you're kind of avoiding the whole problem by doing that. Anyways, like the money thing, overconsumption, all this kind of stuff, it's actually not contributing to our well-being at all. All of us, all the stuff that we do, working, doing shitty jobs, having no spirituality, like we are completely out of it. And what about if we just, you know, like, yeah, we need to go back and like go back to the forest, growing your own veggies, and maybe the not working anymore. Like, I don't know. Like the kids knows. That's where I wanted to. The kids knows. They're going
to
tell us.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. Yeah. But something I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, I know you've been doing a bit of work on kind of breath work and meditation to help you through some challenging times in the last year or so. Mm-hmm. And it's a time, I think, where everyone needs a little bit of help at the minute, because we are all having to slow down and we're not used to it. And being stuck at home and worried about finances and all of that is pretty challenging for people. So, I was just wondering if you could share a little bit around that side of things and how it's worked for you and any techniques that you found valuable.
So in October I did a breath work retreat. So I it was a six days retreat.
Okay.
And so basically Ed is a breath work practitioner here in Whistler, and I had my injury and everything, and I was pretty depressed, to be honest. And then I saw him and he told to me about the breath work and stuff. So I ended up seeing him, and I had no clue of what he was really. And so I ended up seeing him, and then he was like, so do you know what I'm going to do? Like, do you know what it is? And I was like, no, I don't know. And he was like, do you want to know? I was like, no, let's do it. So I went on the table, started to breathe. And then I had the most powerful experience in my whole life. Like, crazy intense, like something that I had no idea what it was. And basically breathwork technique is basically conscious breath. So you basically connect you breathe through your mouth, you breathe through your mouth, and you're going to connect your inhale and your exhale at the top and the bottom. There is no hold, and there is no time in between anything. So you just connect it slower or faster or anything. And you're going to, your speed and depth of a breath is going to change. And you basically start to do that. And the practitioner, so Ed, was starting to, like kind of guide me a little bit, guide my breath more in my stomach, more into my heart, more in my throat, and kind of moving everything. And then after like, I don't know, like 10, 15 minutes, I started to feel like a lot of tingling in my hand and a lot of stuff in my brain and everything. And like really like strong feelings. And I wasn't thinking about anything else. I was just like in my body right there, feeling everything. And my body started to tense and everything. And I had like some crazy stuff happening, but it was feeling so good, like such a strong energy just with my breath, like breathing. Mm-hmm. And the session lasted an hour, and then I went through a bunch of things, and it was kind of really tripping. And then So you do like probably like 20, 30 minutes of breath work. And then after that, you're going to don't focus in your breath anymore. And you're just going to go into like a really deep relaxation kind of meditation. There's mm-hmm. music around and stuff. And you just, you know, there is nothing else. You are in your body. There's nothing. There's no thought. There's nothing. And it was, yeah, super powerful. And I went out of that. So the session was done. And I kind of, the first thing I said, I had my eyes closed still. I was still laying down. And then I say, what the fuck was that? And then he started to laugh. And he was like, right? And I was like, yeah. And so I did another one. And then that's at the end of the second one. He told me, I do this retreat. Do you want to come? And I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to come. So I booked for the retreat. And that was in mid-October. And it was a really tough, really tough period in my life, this moment, because I was, we were going through like pretty tough time with Katrina, so my partner, and mm-hmm. we ended up separating.
Okay. So yeah, sorry to hear that, man.
That's okay. That's okay. I think, you know, I think that sometimes in life we, and especially us, male, we don't say things, you know, we don't, when there is a problem, we try to hold stuff and we don't say stuff. We don't process emotions. We don't know how to process emotions. We don't talk to our feelings and we hold everything inside. And by saying that, you basically, you know, you kind of go, you're not yourself anymore. You become, you know, you become the one that the person wants you to be, and you are not yourself anymore. You're not who you are. Yeah. And I think that's what I felt really. Like I never really say stuff in all my relationship in the past. And then always I ended up like exploding really. And yeah, I've done some stuff that I shouldn't have been doing. So we ended up separating. And since I separated, so I did this breathwork retreat, and I went through a fucking roller coaster of like emotions and situations. Like I went back in the past, like experiencing some things that I've like done in when I was a kid, and like I was really like going deep into myself. And the more I was starting to understand my patterns and everything, and the more I was delivering myself from the past, I was feeling free. You know, like I was feeling back myself, and I was like, holy shit, this is really powerful. And so the retreat was done, and yeah, and I was like really clear to what I needed to do is to have some time on my own to like really do this like spiritual journey and like meditate and all this kind of stuff to learn who I am really and where I want to go in life. And and my best friend Chad died as well.
And, I remember seeing that.
So it was like a lot of things, like a spiritual kind of growth, but at the same time really painful, because I was really starting to understand a lot of things and processing a lot of stuff that I've done in my life, and which is sometimes you go back to things that you know you try to avoid and you don't really want to think about, and you're really facing that now. So it was painful to see my patterns and stuff that I've done. Mm-hmm. And going through a separation, so being also faced with the Whistler housing crisis, because there is no place to live in Whistler, and the rent and everything is crazy fucking expensive. And like going through all this kind of stuff, and my best friend Chad, who passed away at the same time, so it was wow, a lot of things happened at the same time. But at the same, you know, like he was such a like, and still is a big learning experience for me right now. Like I'm learning so much on myself, like every day. Like it's kind of cool. And the more I'm going into this direction, like finding myself, like really, and saying my truth, and saying, like really, being along with what I believe and my values and everything, I'm more and more ready to be this person and getting rid of the stuff that I don't believe in, and you know, like that's what we were talking with the sponsors and stuff. Now I, you know, like, now I have these values and this is the things I believe in, and I'm not going to be I'm not going to be unbalanced anymore. This is not good for me. It makes me struggle. It makes me depressed, and I don't want that anymore. So yeah. So the fact that there is no season this year and everything is kind of holding, like everything is standby, is actually like, you know, a little bit of a gift for me. I have more time to process stuff. I have more time to work on my business, and yeah, and I think that in few months I will be really ready to make decisions in my life. Yeah.
Stuff, man. What have you found helpful through all of this then? Obviously the breath work side of things has been helpful. What kind of things have helped you get through it, helped you reflect?
Well, breath work, meditation, doing things for the planet, you know, and for people, for the community, is something that really helps as well. You know, like trying to see wider than just the tip of your nose, you know, like a lot of people are stuck in their bubble, you know, like it's their only life and it's all like, you know, like everything is about you. And I think that if you start to put that a little bit on the side and, you know, like, for example, help your community, do some stuff for the planet, doing some garbage stuff, and you kind of, you go back to yourself a little bit and you go back to what's essential and you get out of your own little bubble. And I think that's really important for people right now. We need to kind of see a little bit wider and see the world right now a little bit with a new eye, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What style of meditation do you use? What does that look like for you?
So it depends. Like it really depends. Meditation is a little bit tough. You know, I think it's a really tough one. Like sometimes when I talk to people and they, you know, we talk about meditation, like with my dad sometimes. My dad say that sometimes he meditates. But for him, meditating is that he's going to visualize himself, for example, in a nice forest. You know, like he's going to basically go through a journey a little bit. But that's not meditation. That's basically by doing that. Or you're doing basically a relaxation doing that. A meditation is actually being completely in your body and feeling where you have some holes of energy. You know, like you can really feel everything and there is no thought, there is no nothing, and you are completely here right now in the moment in your body. And it's and so if you just sit down and you try to meditate like that for the first time, there is no way you're going to get there. There is no way. Like it's not going to work. So by doing breath work, you just basically lie down, you're going to focus on your brain, on your breath, and you're going to let stuff happen. And after 5 minutes, I guarantee you that you won't be thinking about anything else anymore. You're going to be completely in your body with the sensation that we have, the feelings and everything. And like you're going to really feel holes of energy and energy moving and stuff. And that's the beginning of like entering into meditation. And it's beautiful. You know, like it's kind of funny that we don't learn as child to process emotions. We don't learn that. We don't know what it is. And sometimes we live all our life without processing any emotions. And by processing an emotion is like, you know, like you are a kid and your parents are fighting a lot. You know, they have like big argument, they fight a lot. This is something that you can carry all your life with you. This is like some emotions, because when you are a kid and you see your parents fighting, you don't know if it's actually because of you, and you have fears, like you have that in yourself and you don't process that. And this emotion is like right there within you. And sometimes you can actually, if you start a journey with breathwork, meditation, or this kind of stuff, you're actually more aware of these emotions. And sometimes you go back to that. Like suddenly you have like a connection and you go back to the past and you see yourself as a child, fucking hell, being in front of your parents, and you really feel this in you, and you can forgive your parents, you can forgive yourself, you can completely get rid of that, and it's gone. And it feels so good to do that. It feels so fucking good. But we don't know that. You know, we don't learn that. And I think we should.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it takes time, right? You can't just expect to meditate
no.
the first time and it and all that sort of stuff to happen. Like no. it's something you got to work out, I guess.
I've never
got there with it.
No. And I do. I meditate every day. Like I'm going to meditate like 10 minutes in the morning and sometimes 10 minutes at night. It doesn't have to be an hour. Like you know, it can be super short. But even 5 minutes, just sitting down and just like, even if you can't get to this zone, to this place. Just the fact that you actually can see how much thoughts you have into your brain, in your mind right now, is actually pretty helpful. You're like, holy shit, it's pretty busy today. You know? You're like, ooh. Like, and how can you be like in the present moment and being really conscious to everything, to what you do, if your mind is completely crazy and you are always in your thoughts? You can't do it. You're not present. And you can't be aware of everything that's happening around you. And that's missing out the point a little bit of life. But I wanted to say there's one thing that's super easy and it's safe. Breathwork can be a little bit, I really encourage people to do it with like a practitioner, to have someone with you at first.
Mm-hmm.
But there is one thing that's super good is Wim Hof.
The Iceman.
This guy has some really strong breathwork practices. And, you know, like he mixed that with the cold and the cold therapy and this kind of stuff. And things that he does are pretty safe through the breath. And it's super, super, super powerful. Like it's crazy powerful. So I really, and I think that most of the people that are going to listen to us are mountain bikers. And we like strong feelings. Like, you know, like we are kind of adrenaline addicted.
Yeah,
and you are going to experience some really crazy stuff with the breathwork techniques that Wim Hof has. So you can Google him on YouTube, Wim Hof YouTube. You're gonna see some videos, and you just follow what he does. You just you know, sometimes he's gonna go through some techniques, and you just do the same. You close your eyes, you do what he says, and you see. You'll see. It's pretty crazy. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes to Wim Hof's videos and bits and pieces so people can have a go at that. But we should let you go because I know you've got places to be. But thanks so much again for taking time out of your day for a catch up. It's
thank you so much, Chris. Thank you. Let's see how this one's going to be pursued.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting year all around, I think.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Well, for you, I hope this virus sorts itself out in the future and we can get back to some form of normality or
new normal. Let's say we don't go back to normal. Let's say we're going towards a new normal, a nice one.
A better normal.
A better normal. Cool.
Nice one. All right. Thanks, Johan. Appreciate
it. You take care, okay? Be careful out there. Take care of your newborn and have fun being a new dad. It's cool.
Thanks, man.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye, Chris.
All right, that's it for this episode with Jörn. I hope you enjoyed listening and hopefully it's given you something to think about. A massive thanks to KushCore for supporting this episode. Don't forget to check out what they have to offer over at KushCore.com. And if you want to be in with a chance of winning a set of your choice, then you just need to spend a couple of minutes filling out my listener survey over at downtimepodcast.com/survey. That data is super important for me to understand how I can make the best content for you and to help me when talking to brands about supporting the podcast, which I need in order to keep this thing going. If once you've filled out the survey, you've still got a couple of minutes spare, then please leave us a review wherever it is you listen to the podcast. Give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to help support the podcast, then share the love over at downtimepodcast.com/shop. Keep on spreading the word, telling your friends about the podcast and sharing our episodes on your social media. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon, but until then, look after each other, and if it's okay to do so, then get out and ride safely.